Just before the Passover feast, Jesus knew that the time had come to leave this world and go to the Father. Having loved his dear companions, he continued to love them right to the end.
It was supper time. The devil by now had Judas, son of Simon the Iscariot, firmly in his grip. All set for the betrayal, Jesus knew that the Father had put him in complete charge of everything, that he had come from God and was on his way back to God. So he got up from the supper table, set aside his robe, and put on an apron. Then he poured water into a basin and began to wash the feet of the disciples, drying them with his apron.
Master, you wash my feet?
You don't understand now what I'm doing, but it will be clear enough to you later.
You're not going to wash my feet, ever.
If I don't wash you, you can't be part of what I'm doing.
Not only my feet, then. Wash my hands. Wash my head.
If you've had a bath in the morning, you only need your feet washed now, and you're clean from head to toe. My concern, you understand, is holiness, not hygiene. So now you're clean, but not every one of you. You address me as teacher and master, and rightly so. That is what I am. So if I, the master and teacher, washed your feet, you must now wash each other's feet. I've laid down a pattern for you. What I've done, you do. I'm only pointing out the obvious. A servant is not ranked above his master. An employee does not give orders to the employer. If you understand what I'm telling you, act like it and live a blessed life.
Several years ago, in the Dan had hair era that you've heard me talk about in sermons before, my ex-wife and I attended a large evangelical megachurch in Edina. And we were both very active in the music and drama program at that church. Every year, we were both in the very large Easter production. Becky played in the orchestra, and I was Andrew, one of the 12 disciples. The disciples at that time were mostly made up of most of the tenor section and a few basses, and we were a really rowdy bunch of actors, especially when it came to the upper room scene. The actor who played Peter really hammed it up, and especially the line we heard in the passage today, well, not just my feet, but my hands and my head and my whole body, and one time we really thought he was just going to take the basin and just throw the water on him. Us group of disciples that were acting that out, we always got a big kick out of that scene. Looking back, and it's been a few years, you know, we were so focused on what was going to happen next, which was Jesus' betrayal, that we totally lost the whole point of the foot-washing scene. In fact, it wasn't until I took Introduction to the New Testament at seminary with Dr. Brandon Scott that I began to really understand that so much of what Jesus did was subversive in cultural norm-breaking for that time period. So let's talk about foot washing for a moment. In Jesus' time, there was no paved asphalt highways, no concrete sidewalks, no metro transit, no taxicab service. If you wanted to get somewhere, you walked. Or you rode a donkey, or if you were really lucky, you got to ride in a cart pulled by the donkey. Sure, you know, we've all seen the pictures and read the description in our history books about those fine Roman roads that were put all throughout the Roman Empire. They were made of stone, and what does stone sit on and sit in? Dirt, and an awful lot of it. And so all the traffic of people moving back and forth stirred up a lot of dust. And of course, the shoe of the day was not something closed-toed like most of us are wearing today. It was your basic sandal. So just imagine what your feet would look like after you spent the morning at the market, doing a little shopping, or if you'd been on a long journey. Just imagine that for a moment. Now, culturally, foot washing was considered an act of hospitality, but was considered beneath the dignity of average people. So it was usually the servants that got that lucky job. And if there were no household servants, well, you got to wash your feet yourself. And dining at the time was done in a reclining sort with pillows, wooden or stone couches. And the tables were not exactly what you always see in the famous Last Supper paintings we see around in buildings. They were a little bit more low slung, close to the ground. So clean feet were really important to the dining experience, if you catch my drift. So imagine with me, if you will, the disciples gathering in the upper room for dinner. Jesus had just completed his public ministry in the days leading up to the Feast of the Passover. It's very late. The group, most likely, they've been traveling all day. They've been walking. They're tired and they're hungry. There is no mention in the scripture that we heard today about the owner of the house, any servants. In fact, they move right into the dinner and they skip the foot washing. So imagine they're all sitting around the tables. And Jesus then gets up from the table, and the rest of the guys are so busy eating, drinking, talking about the events of the day that probably they don't even notice him get up. And, you know, he goes and does what we saw here today. Then all of a sudden, one by one, the room starts to get very quiet. The disciples stop talking, and they look at Jesus. He's holding a towel and a wash basin, and what's going on? And no one's saying a word at this point, but imagine with me, well, what's going through their minds? Jesus, what are you doing? You're the guy who fed 5,000, healed the lepers, turned the water into wine, confounded the religious and Roman leaders. What are you doing washing our feet? Jesus, you're our teacher. You shouldn't be doing this. In washing his disciples' feet, Jesus simply uses water and a towel. Yet the extravagance is no less. Indeed, it is nothing short of scandalous that the one who comes from God and is going to God should take on the menial task of a slave. This act points to the even greater scandal that's going to happen forthcoming later in the week, in the dark, dark hours ahead, when Jesus will lay down his life crucified on a Roman cross, the form of execution that's reserved for rebels and for slaves. And of course, Peter, dear, wonderful, strong-headed Peter, jumps right in and gives voice to the action, to the scandal of the action, and voices probably what everybody else wanted to say. Lord, are you going to wash my feet? When Jesus says that Peter will understand later what he is doing, Peter objects even more. You will never wash my feet. And of course, if we think a little bit, we're reminded that this is not the first time Peter says to Jesus, you're not going to do something. In Mark's gospel, when Jesus speaks of his impending suffering and death, Peter once again goes, oh no, you're not going to do that. That's not going to happen. We're going to be here to protect you. And of course, just like there, we see in today's passage, Jesus gently corrects Peter. Unless I wash you, you will have no share with me. To which Peter responds, Lord, not my feet, but my hands and my head. And then, of course, Jesus responds again. It's a little cryptic, if you think about it. One who is bathed does not need to wash except for the feet. It is entirely clean. His statement seems to suggest that one's relationship to Jesus has cleansing power that lasts. It will soon become clear how utterly dependent Peter and the others are on this gift of grace. Jesus adds, and you are clean, though not all of you. And the narrator explains, for he knew who was to betray him. For this reason, he said, not all of you are clean. This statement brings to us the greatest scandal of this story. It's astonishing enough that Jesus took on the role of a slave and washes the dirty feet of his disciples. But even more astounding is the fact that he knows so well what's about to happen and that they will all fail him in his greatest hour of need. Jesus insists on washing the feet of Peter, knowing full well that Peter will deny him to save his own skin. What is more, Jesus stoops to wash the feet of Judas, knowing full well that Judas has already conspired to betray him to those seeking his life. Yet even with Judas, cold, calculating, backstabbing Judas, Jesus' love remains unwavering. Jesus washes Judas' dirty feet along with everyone else. Jesus' example suggests that loving as he has loved means taking the role of a servant, caring for the needs of others without expecting anything in return. His example suggests that it is to do this not only for those who treat us well, but even for those who disappoint and hurt and betray us. Can Jesus really expect us to do this? To love and to serve even those who fail us or stab us in the back? Are we not allowed even a few exceptions once in a while to the love commandment? Jesus' commandment to love one another is not a commandment to feel affection, but a commandment to act in a loving way, even when we would rather do otherwise. Of course, we always fall short of God's perfect love, but that cannot be an excuse to nurse grudges and wallow in unloving behavior. As we are washed by Jesus in God's deep and generous love, our hearts are stretched to love more completely, fully, and unwavering. Some years ago, CNN reporter Christine Amanpour interviewed a woman from Rwanda named Iphigenia. She was from the Tutsi tribe, and during the Rwandan genocide of 1994, her husband and five children were clubbed and hacked to death by a mob of Hutus, including one of her neighbors. The neighbor who had participated in the massacre spent 7 years in prison and then went before a tribal court where he asked for forgiveness from Iphigenia and the entire community. Iphigenia opened her heart and forgave her neighbor, but it did not end there. Iphigenia was a master weaver in her village, and she taught her neighbor's wife how to weave baskets. The two became friends and business partners. On the day that Christiane Amanpour was interviewing her, Iphigenia had invited these same neighbors into her home and was serving them dinner. That's right. She was serving them dinner. She was serving dinner to the man who killed her husband and children. When asked how she found it in her heart to forgive, Iphigenia said simply, "I am a Christian and I pray a lot." Foot washing. It challenges us to love, to forgive, to extend grace and forgiveness to those who hurt us the most, and to serve a world that lots of times just doesn't get it. It is not for the faint of heart. Amen. And now it's that time in the service where we invite those, if you're in